Chapter 8, Board and Committee Members, Meeting with God. Let those who attend committee meetings remember that they are meeting with God, who has given them their work. Let them come together with reverence and consecration of heart. They meet to consider important matters connected with the Lord's cause. In every particular, their actions are to show that they are desirous of understanding His will in regard to the plans to be laid for the advancement of His work. 7T 256, 1902. Let everyone who sits in council and committee meetings write in his heart the words, "I am working for time and for eternity, and I am accountable to God for the motives that prompt me to action." Let this be his motto. Let the prayer of the psalmist be his prayer. "Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth, keep the door of my lips. Incline not my heart to any evil thing." Psalm 141, verse 3, 4, 7T 258, 259, 1902. If there were more prayer in the councils of those bearing responsibilities, more humbling of the heart before God, we should see abundant evidence of divine leadership, and our work would make rapid progress. 8T 238, 1904. Seek wisdom from above. Everyone that serves in the board meetings needs to seek most earnestly the wisdom from above. The influence of the Spirit of Christ upon their hearts will then place a right mold upon the work. The transforming grace of Christ should transform every board meeting. It will be able to quell tumultuous actions and charm away the unhallowed effects of business, worldly policy, which makes them sharp, critical men, ready to accuse and make them overbearing. There will have to be most earnest reformation in the characters of men who are now connected with our important institutions. There is most valuable talent in some respects which these men possess, while in other respects they must bring into their character a different mold after the divine character of Christ. Every one of them must remember they have not yet attained, that the work of character building is not yet finished. If they will improve every ray of light that God has given and walk in this light, then they will be learning lessons from Christ. They will compare their lives with Christ's life and character. They will discern where they have failed to meet the requirements of God's holy law and will seek to make themselves perfect in their sphere, even as God in heaven is perfect in his sphere. A new board of directors should be formed, of men who give evidence that they will not deviate from the way of righteousness. A change must be made. Things must be so ordered that Christ will be recognized in every movement made. Those who occupy positions on boards or committees should be men who seek the Lord with their whole heart, men who preserve the humility found by seeking counsel from God. Satan will control if God does not. The board of directors should ever act as under the divine eye, and with the continual sense that they are only finite men and are liable to make mistakes in judgment and in decisions and plans unless they are closely connected with God. As they are only weak and erring men themselves, they should feel kindness and pity for others who may err. The divine standard must be met. You should take the Lord with you into every one of your councils. If you sense that God is in your assemblies, every transaction will be conscientiously, carefully, and prayerfully considered. And if these men are not in communication with God, Satan will just as surely be one in their council and take advantage of their unconsecrated state in their decisions. There will be acts of injustice because God was not presiding in their councils. The Spirit of Christ must be an abiding, controlling power over the heart and mind. Men entrusted with positions of responsibility, when sitting in council meetings and deliberating as committeemen, must bear in mind that if the One Mighty in council is not welcomed in their meetings, there is present one who will work with a will to suggest unwise plans, and they will not have discernment to perceive the speciousness of the arguments presented and will move in accordance with unjust, unwise principles. I can but have freshly brought to my mind the view of the time when Satan, standing in a high position in heaven, began with crafty reasoning to induce the loyal angels to assent to his theories and accept them as truth. In his interviews with other angels, after succeeding in finding sympathizers, he arranged his arguments and presented them as if they were sentiments that had originated in the minds of those whom he first led astray.
Today, Satan works as he has always worked in the past. Unless the men in the office of publication who know so little of the deep movings of the Spirit of God shall lay aside their self-confidence, their self-will, their natural stubbornness, a stubbornness that has been greatly strengthened by constant resistance of the Spirit of God, constant rejection of light, constant determination to walk in accordance with their own wisdom, they will have a bitter harvest to garner. They do not see this harvest now. Meetings monitored by heaven. In your council meetings and committee meetings, decisions are made, plans devised and matured, which, when put into practice, will leave an impression on the work at large, and no vestige of spirit of harshness should appear. Loud, impatient words should never be heard. Remember that in all your council meetings, there is a heavenly watcher. Do not allow one word of vanity to be spoken, for you are legislating for God, and he says to you, "Be still, and know that I am God." If your committee meetings and council meetings are not under the direct supervision of the Spirit of God, your conclusions will be earthborn and worthy of no more consideration than are any man's expressions. Christ says, "Without me, ye can do nothing." If he is not honored in your assemblies as chief counselor, your planning comes from no higher source than the human mind. Last night I was in a council meeting, and those in council did much talking and read concerning plans and details, and thus consumed much time. Those in council were slow in doing the business and did not express things in a distinct, definite way to make progress in business. While deliberating much upon minor matters, important matters, which needed clearness of mind, activity of thought, and weighty consideration, were left almost untouched. One who spake with no uncertainty laid his hand upon Elder Daniel's shoulder and said, "God hath given to every man his work. Will you please leave God room to work with his individual workers? He has not left his burden of work upon your hands. He has never placed upon one man or upon any board of men impossibilities, the burden of entering into the minutiae in regard to how workers shall carry on their work. He has never laid upon anyone the burden of making rules of action which will bind about and restrict the work, and confine the workers to a certain course of action. The fact that a man has been selected to be the president of a conference does not mean that he shall have authority to rule over his fellow workmen. This is after the practice of Rome, and it cannot be tolerated, for it restricts religious liberty, and the man is led to place himself where God alone should be. Work has been done in the conference before the ruling president was placed as its head. If he assumes to restrict individual action and confine men to his own ideas, which he supposes to be right, or if a board shall make rules that enter into the details of what the workers should do, no help will in any way come to those who are engaging in the work. The workmen are compelled to decide on the spot as to what they will do. The place, the circumstances, the interest, the moral sentiment of the people will have to decide in many cases the course of action to be pursued. It would be inconsistent for the worker to feel that he is compelled to write to the president or to the board for permission to pursue a certain course which his experience and judgment tell him is the best course to pursue under the circumstances. Wherever an earnest effort is made to bring souls to the knowledge of the truth, the angels of God guard the interest. The only course that can be pursued by the worker is not to look to or depend upon any man, but to look to Jesus and to do his work in harmony with his revealed will.
Composition and work of committees. Too many ministers. A mistake has been made in placing ministers on so many boards and committees to do the financial planning and to decide questions that should be decided by businessmen. Our ministers should not be called to spend their time in board meetings and council meetings. In doing this class of work, they are not advancing the interests of the cause as they would if they were to go out into aggressive warfare. There are cases when our ministers are needed at our institutions to help in deciding important questions. A minister can do much for God at a sanitarium. This line of work is not to be neglected. But ministers are not to spend their time in the ordinary routine and debates of business.
Fewer and shorter meetings. All the council and committee meetings should be so planned and conducted that these wearing, taxing seasons may be lessened, both in number and duration. Those who engage in them should give much thought to the matters to be considered before bringing them before the committee, and should come quickly to the points of interest. Make them plain, and let everyone try to dispatch the business as speedily as possible, and not hold and tax the minds and bodies of men for long hours to do the business that might and should be dispatched promptly. There should be a constant effort for brevity in business meetings, harmony and simplicity in the work, and avoidance of all unnecessary machinery will do much to preserve the courage and the physical and mental energies of those who have to consider so many points. Those who have none, or but little, of this kind of labor should be very careful how they criticize or censure the ones who do have these burdens to bear. Let all so conduct themselves that they will not throw any extra burdens upon our president. They should not depend upon him to do their thinking. If they keep their own souls in the love of God, growing in spirituality, dissensions will be shut out. The oil of grace will cause the machinery to run smoothly. Men in responsible positions should not be kept up through unseasonable hours in committee meetings. They need rest for the brain and will break down unless they have rest. Reforms will have to be brought round in the holding of committee meetings, that those who are actors in these meetings may have clear, sharp thoughts and thus expedite the business. Committee meetings, as they are run by our people through the hours when men should rest the weary brain, are destructive to the mental, physical, and moral powers. Then have it understood that those who come to the committee meetings come with the thought that they are to meet with God, who has given them their work, that it is a sin to waste moments in unimportant conversation, for they are doing the Lord's business and must do the work in the most businesslike, perfect way. God's servants, in need of rest of mind and sleep, have been greatly distressed and burdened over these matters. In the hope of reaching a decision, they continue their meetings far into the night. But life is too precious to be imperiled in this way. Let the Lord carry the burden. Wait for Him to adjust the difficulties. Give the weary brain a rest. Unreasonable hours are destructive to the physical, the mental, and the moral powers. If the brain were given proper periods of rest, the thoughts would be clear and sharp, and business would be expedited. 7T 256, 1902. Reduce number of resolutions. I have been shown that our conferences have been overburdened with resolutions. 1/10 as many would be of far greater value than a larger number. I stated these things clearly, but still you, Underwood, urged that the resolution should be carried into effect. You made it evident that if God was leading me, He was certainly not leading you. Your resistance to my words, and the manifestation of so much feeling expressed in your lowering countenance and your determined words, impressed me very unfavorably. Seek wisdom from the group. In counseling for the advancement of the work, no one man is to be a controlling power, a voice for the whole. Proposed methods and plans are to be carefully considered so that all the brethren may weigh their relative merits and decide which should be followed. In studying the fields to which duty seems to call us,
it is well to take into account the difficulties that will be encountered in these fields. So far as possible, committees should let the people understand their plans, in order that the judgment of the Church may sustain their efforts. Many of the Church members are prudent and have other excellent qualities of mind. Their interest should be aroused in the progress of the cause. Many may be led to have a deeper insight into the work of God and to seek for wisdom from above to extend Christ's kingdom by saving souls perishing for the word of life. Men and women of noble minds will yet be added to the number of those of whom it is said, "Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, that ye should go and bring forth fruit." John 15, verse 16. 7T 259, 1902. Dealing with critical individuals. A hard, unjust, critical spirit has been indulged among those who have held positions of trust in the work of God. Unless those who have indulged this spirit are converted, they will be relieved of the responsibility of acting a part in committees of council, even in the transaction of business. Unless they are converted, their voices must not be heard in the council, for the aggregate result is more injurious than beneficial. August 3rd. God's business and the right frame of mind.
Levity. Levity is not appropriate in meetings where the solemn work and word of God are under consideration. The prayer has been offered that Christ shall preside in the assembly and impart his wisdom, his grace, and righteousness. Is it consistent to take a course that will be grievous to his spirit and contrary to his work? Let us bear in mind that Jesus is in our midst. Then an elevating, controlling influence from the Spirit of God will pervade the assembly. There will be manifested that wisdom which is from above, which is first pure, then peaceable, full of mercy and good fruits. James 3, verse 17, which cannot err. In all the plans and decisions, there will be that charity that seeketh not her own, that is not easily provoked, that thinketh no evil, that rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, that beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 5-7. GW 448, 1915. Let them not waste a moment in unimportant conversation, for the Lord's business should be conducted in a businesslike, perfect way. If some member of a committee is careless and irreverent, let him be reminded that he is in the presence of a witness by whom all actions are weighed. 7T 256, 1902. Combative spirit. The selfish, unchristlike spirit pervading the publishing house is revealed by a certain kind of loud, boisterous talking and unsanctified zeal in council meetings. Very few are the words that Christ loves to hear. The spirit of those present is not refined and expressive of the spirit of Christ. Many bold propositions and loud-voiced speeches are made. Business is carried forward in a spirit of combativeness. The actions taken by those in positions of responsibility are not inspired of God, but are in accordance with man's wisdom, and will work injury to their fellow men. While they make an effort not to be slothful in business, they forget to be fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, and their souls become more and more dry and sapless, as withered branches of the vine. Religion and business are becoming divorced. Worldly, selfish plans are coming in. Those who should seek to be inspired by God are content to act in accordance with man's wisdom. Many who know not what spirit they are of are ready to reach out their hands to grasp and gather in that which they have not earned. Many are under condemnation because of the grave sin of selfishness, which is leavening the institution. One confederates with another. "You stand by me, and I will stand by you," they say to each other. Thus they lead others into false paths, bringing in the strange fire that God has positively forbidden to be used in his work. With some, serving the Lord has but little place. They think they have no time to pray. I have been instructed that committee meetings are not always pleasing to God. Some have come to these meetings with a cold, hard, critical, loveless spirit. Such may do great harm, for with them is the presence of the evil one that keeps them on the wrong side. Not infrequently, their unfeeling attitude toward measures under consideration brings in perplexity, delaying decisions that should be made. 7T 256, 1902. Let all understand that there is to be no trifling. Everyone should come to these meetings in a consecrated, devotional frame of mind, because important matters are to be considered in relation to the cause of God. This work is to be done after his own order, and if men have been elected to the grave responsibility of having a voice and exerting an influence in the accomplishment of this great work, let their actions in every particular show that they recognize their responsibility and accountability to understand the will of the Lord as far as it is possible. I am pained to the heart. Blindness in part hath happened unto Israel. Men in high places are to be distrusted and feared, lest they be led astray by the enemy, and lest they shall lead astray other souls. I fear lest they shall seek to hurt and destroy, if possible, those whom they cannot control. Inspiration represents such men as biting and devouring one another. Into their management will be woven partiality, favoritism, hypocrisy, and bribery. Strange fire will be offered to God in the place of the fire of his own kindling. Diligence, integrity, and godliness must be combined in God's service. In our business meetings, it is important that precious time should not be consumed in debating points that are of small consequence. The habit of petty criticism should not be indulged, for it perplexes and confuses minds, and shrouds in mystery the things that are most plain and simple. GW 447, 1915.
Can it be that our brethren think that their criticisms are the productions of the Holy Spirit? It will be found that those who are criticized have more to show for their efforts than those who criticize. The names of the humble workers are stamped on the books of heaven with the words, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord." But opposite the names of the critics stand the words, "Thou art weighed in the balances and found wanting." Stubbornness. Human nature is so frail, so ignorant, so liable to misconception, that each one should be careful of the estimate he places upon another. His ways may not be the ways of his fellow man. It is well that all are not alike, that the Lord has placed a variety of gifts in his church. Obstinacy is a bad trait of character, and if not overcome, is the means of doing a great deal of harm. He who is obstinate will not yield, whatever sentiments he may entertain. Narrowness of mind is the cause of obstinacy. There are men of intellectual capacity who have allowed obstinacy to develop in their character, and they refuse to believe things that are right, because they themselves did not originate them. Obstinacy is a barrier to all improvement. An obstinate man will not be readily convinced of anything which his sight cannot take in. He does not know what it means to walk by faith. He adheres to his own plans and opinions, be they right or wrong, because he has already adopted this line of thought. He may have abundant reason to see that he is wrong. His brethren may raise their voices against his opinions and his methods for making a success of the work. But he cherishes an almost immovable bar against conviction. Such a man, unless converted to God, should not be placed on boards or committees. He is constitutionally unfitted to make important decisions. He is determined not to be convinced.
he will not yield to men of experience, and therefore he will be a hindrance instead of a help. He will suggest sentiments that are unsanctioned by the experience or judgment of men who are fully as intelligent and as wise as he is. He will make assertions as though he had all the aftersight, and will uphold his ideas as all-sufficient. Self has for so long been the ruling element that the unfortunate man considers it a virtue to have, as he thinks, a mind of his own. If his way is not followed, he will raise objections on every occasion, in small matters and in large. He will hold to his words, whether they are true or entirely false. This practice, often repeated, rose into confirmed habit and becomes character. Obstinacy is the most discouraging feature of a man's character. By two or three who have made criticism their science, who take a position in opposition to nearly everything, the very best business may be dragged down to a low level. They can paint more seeds of doubt than they would wish to see ripen into harvest. Every idea which they do not present has to them some objectionable features. In the place of seeing the good in the propositions which the Lord impresses others to present, they see the disadvantages, and thus, in a most ingenious, roundabout way, the fresh, new idea is made to appear objectionable. Upon the improvements or ideas which do not originate with them, they heap such a mass of their own suppositions that the board or committee assent, although they cannot understand. They think it is beyond them, wisdom too deep for their comprehension. The objectors present their suppositions in such a light that that which is perfectly right appears distorted. They hold up crooked glasses through which things right and just looked crooked. Often those in a board meeting might have come to a unanimous decision for the right had not men yielded to the temptation which Satan presented to Adam to throw discredit and accusation upon God. This is the way in which many council meetings have been held. Plans good and right have been picked to pieces and distrusted. But this kind of work has had its day. The Lord is not pleased to have this spirit hindering and marring his work. He calls for men who will carry out his will, men who will be controlled by his Holy Spirit. Heaven's record. In your council meetings, you are forgetting that your words are written in a book, and that the results of these words will be seen in the future works they produce. Sooner or later, your own propositions will surely react upon yourselves. This I declare to you in the name of the Lord. You know not what manner of spirit you are of. The Lord is present at your council meetings and witnesses all your transactions. You are either serving Him with pure, unadulterated love, or else you are sinning against Him in everything you do.
There is a dead fly in the ointment. Let not those who serve in connection with the sacred work of God forget that He is associated with you in the publishing house and in the general management of His cause. My brethren, remember that He witnesses all your transactions. Remember that the heavenly universe hears every selfish, avaricious, unjust proposition, and many are now being made. The God of truth observes every act of injustice which you commit by making decisions that have a tendency, in any degree, to cripple the influence of usefulness of one of His human agencies. He will not look with approbation upon the least deviation from righteous principles in plans and methods. He will not sanction the least departure from kindness and unselfishness. He will punish every violation of the laws of truth and righteousness. Doth not God see? I am instructed to tell you that God sees our every act, and He records in His books every departure from heavenly principles. He detects every underhanded confederacy to benefit self, under pretense of serving the cause of God. He will blow upon every dollar thus gained, and covetously appropriated. It shall not benefit the receiver,
for God will blow upon it. Every act of fraud and deceit is detected by the eye that never slumbers or sleeps. Fraudulent, deceptive plans and methods of working, which will exalt self by the selfish appropriation of means, will not be allowed to go unpunished. God will call to an account the men whose disposition it is to depress, and to look with indifference upon these who do their work in simplicity and with faithfulness. All these things are written as with a pen of iron and with lead in a rock, there to live. There are those who need to learn that the heavenly universe is acquainted with all the works of the children of men. I pray that the Lord God of Israel may impress it upon our responsible men that if they turn from His word to their human ideas and plans, they are without excuse. A spirit has been coming in that God abominates. A spirit of selfishness, self-exaltation, pomposity. It is time that there was a change in the program. He that sitteth in the heavens requires that a different spirit shall control the proceedings of councils and committees. The principles practiced are not only detrimental to all within the sphere of their action, but they will lead to development of character so objectionable that its possessor cannot find a place among the redeemed. In all your assemblies there is present a watcher, who will not long bear with the perversity of men that have had so great light and so great opportunities.